Welcome to Influential Entrepreneurs, bringing you interviews with elite business leaders and experts, sharing tips and strategies for elevating your business to the next level. Here's your host, Mike Saunders.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Influential Entrepreneurs. This is Mike Saunders, the Authority Positioning Coach. Today we have with us Matthew Ablikan, who's the founder and owner of the Millennials Choice Group. Matthew, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, thanks for having me, and kudos to you for putting great content out there for your audience.
Great, thank you. And I enjoy asking my first question typically when I see a unique company name, Millennials Choice. Well, A, I know who your target audience is, so that's awesome. But what choice do they have? So tell us a little bit about the reason why you chose your company name and then your entrepreneurial background of what led you into getting into working in the field of finance and things like that.
Yeah, so the name really started when I finally made the decision to create something that was bigger than just myself. And over here in Ontario, we see a lot of realtors who build companies that are named after their personal names. And, you know, when you're dealing with clientele or you're doing advertising and marketing, people kind of expect you to be there if it's under your personal name. And I wanted to build something that's bigger than myself, and ultimately with the end in mind where I can potentially sell my business. And so I wanted to create something that was not affiliated directly with my personal name. And I'm a teacher by training. I went to teacher's college here in university, and they teach us at the high school level, they teach us to work with the end in mind. So take the backwards approach, it's called, where you start with the culminative task, the culminative task that you are going to be offering to your students. And you got to then prepare lessons in accordance with that task so that you could help them, prepare that final task. And so I'm thinking about the name and I'm coming up with all kinds of different names. And I said, you know what, the easiest way for me to, market to my demographic and market to my target audience is including them in the name. And Millennials is talked about, and Time Magazine did a piece on it. And there's just been so much good and bad news surrounding millennials. And I said, all right, we'll start with millennials. I'm a millennial. It's relatable. It's a play on words. And then I wanted to create this group of companies and I wanted it to flow. So Millennials Choice Realty, Millennials Choice Mortgages, Millennials Choice Insurance, and all these different names. So I had the word millennials, and then I couldn't figure out the connection word that I wanted to use. And then one day I'm just watching TV and I come across a President's Choice commercial.
Oh yeah.
And I heard Millennials Choice, and that's what happened. So,
well, it's like, you remember way back in the old days of TV commercials where I forget what it was like, toothpaste, like 4 to 5 dentists recommend. And you're like, okay, I guess. But it's like, we are the millennials choice. There's choices out there and we're the millennials choice. So love that. And I like how you focus on main core pillars of opportunity that helps grow wealth and help people plan for retirement. So real estate and insurance and all the things that you focus on. So what was the first foray in? Did you start off in real estate and then start adding in mortgage and insurance after that?
Absolutely. So my core pillar is real estate, and the mortgage and life insurance services are complementary services for our clients. And I just actually reached my 10-year anniversary in the real estate business, and we celebrated that with our clients and close partners and friends. And so it was a great celebration. So 10 years in the business. And I got my license when I was 19 years old in real estate. Wow. So I started fairly young. I had just purchased my first pre-construction property, and I just decided to get licensed and said to myself, whatever I earn in real estate commissions, I'm just going to reinvest back into my portfolio. And then I started telling people and showing people what I was doing and how I was doing it. And one thing led to another. They started telling their friends and referring me to other persons. And that's how I built my business. 90 to 95% of my business today is repeat and referrals.
Wow. That's huge. So here's a question. As you were describing this, and you know, real estate is the core foundation, and foundation is a real estate type term, right? You know, you need a good house foundation. But here's something I wonder. What is the outlook that a millennial has regarding real estate that may be different than a traditional real estate investor? Meaning, you might find someone in their 50s or 60s that, you know, want to invest in real estate. Do millennials view real estate a little bit differently?
Yes, and the studies are showing that millennials are not so emotionally attached to buying a home and owning a home. There are the segment of that population that want to still own a home and believe in the home ownership feeling that one gets when they purchase a home. I'm one of those. I just closed on my primary residence with my wife, and there really is no place like home. It's a different feeling that you get. But there are a large number of the millennial generation that do not want to own a home, cannot afford to own a home, don't want to be tied to one location necessarily, want to enjoy the lifestyle, want to travel, want to just, you know, wear the nicest clothes, drive the nicest cars, whatever the flash that they're into might be. And they don't need to necessarily own a home. And that's, I'm seeing that trend more and more, not only in millennials, but also in Gen Zs as things are becoming more and more unaffordable.
Now, you mentioned primary residence, and when I'm hearing real estate and, you know, investing for the future, do you work mostly with clients that are buying a home to live in, or a good mix between, you say to a millennial, hey, look, to grow wealth, long-term wealth, you need to have real estate, so let's find you some investment properties, multifamily, things like that. What is the mix that you're working with your clients on?
Our group of companies as a whole has a good mix of both. I have staff and agents that specialize in helping first-time home buyers or more experienced investors. My personal specialty is focused on investors, and simply because when you're dealing with a business owner or someone who's looking at a subject property as an investment, you kind of put the emotion aside and you're just kind of dealing with numbers and stats and things like that. So it's a little bit from a transactional standpoint. It's a little bit more smooth in terms of business. So I like focusing on that type of clientele. And my advice to a lot of millennials is that if you can't afford the dream home, and that's something that you really aspire to achieve, get your foot in the market through another means, whether that's buying a pre-construction property or an entry-level condo or something that you can rent out, that you can create some wealth. Get started in real estate. And that's how I did it. I showed them how I did it and how I was able to purchase the primary residence with zero help from my parents, zero financial help from anybody besides the bank who gave me the mortgage. I did that through investment property. So I just speak to the experiences that I've had personally. And I think that's really what attracts my clientele.
So I think when you think about real estate, well, you obviously don't have cash sitting around to buy, you know, a cash offer. Obviously, you need the bank. So then, what a great way to complement your services with mortgage. So let me ask you this question that ties in both real estate and mortgage: is this a viable strategy? And I know that it would be different for everybody, but you know, you think about a millennial that might want to be more mobile or be down in where all the action is. So maybe you pick a city where it's like, oh, I want to live downtown in wherever. I'm going to buy a condo or a loft. And I'm probably going to live there for a couple years, maybe two or three at the most. But my goal is to then get it with maybe a low down payment, live in it, and then move to the next place that I want to move, wherever that might be, and keep that first place as a rental. Could you use that strategy to have a primary residence first and then move on, and you have another primary residence, but you picked up your first rental, and then you do it again and again and again?
Absolutely. And we have a lot of clients who do that now. Yeah. Also in Canada, we have the capital gains tax on all your investment properties, and we don't have a 1031 exchange like the Americans do. So a lot of folks, in order to avoid that, that's what they do. Right. They claim it as their primary residence. They live there. Now it's a year. It used to be 9 months, a year to live there. And then all of a sudden our CRA, which is the American IRS, basically, they know that after that 1 year, this is the value of the property, and thus any gains that you've accumulated during that time are now tax-free going forward. So a lot of people, a lot of my clients, that's their strategy. Yeah. So
you don't incur the capital gains by selling it. You just take the cash flow by renting it out and then move to the next place to live in as a primary residence. And that kind of keeps that that benefit coming along, which cash flow is king. You know, cash is king and cash flow is king.
I agree. And basically what ends up happening is that the value of the property is locked in at the time where the client is now saying it's going to be a rental property. So there's a value that's attributed to that property at that time, and all the gains accumulated up to that point are tax-free. And then from the moment where they decide to rent out the property up to the moment where one day in the future they sell it, as and it's been an investment property that entire time, a rental property that entire time, only those gains are going to be taxable.
Yeah. So now let's think about the concept of cash flow. I've heard this, and I don't know whether this is popular in your part of the world, but I've heard that some real estate professionals will say, hey, let's get this investment property, but rather than renting it out the traditional way, you know, finding this person to rent it for a year or two or whatever, let's set it up as an Airbnb. And I've heard that you can do that easily, but also you get 2 to 3 times more cash flow because you just keep flowing people through. And I know there's headaches involved with that, but have you seen that in your market?
Yes, absolutely. I was just speaking with somebody yesterday who was telling me what that's exactly what they were doing with their condo, and they furnished it and they were getting a lot more money than they traditionally would if they just rented the place out on a, on an annual basis to a tenant. So it's definitely a lucrative business for some. It depends on the property. It depends on the amount of vacancy that property will experience. And it also depends on that person's day to day, what that looks like, because ultimately, a lot of folks don't understand that when you're buying a rental property, you're buying into a business. Yeah. And that there's, you know, our tax system recognizes it as such. You should recognize it as such. There's money coming in. There's money going out in the form of expenses. And people need to understand that it's a business. So you got to take the good, you got to take the bad, and just deal with it. So for some people, like as an example, older folks, maybe Airbnb is not the best thing. They want a little bit more peace of mind. Yeah. They would just want to get that monthly rent check coming in, deal with one tenant and manage that one tenant. Some other folks, you know, especially again, millennials and some Gen Zs, they want that Airbnb. They're very hands-on. They enjoy it. A lot of them are doing the cleaning themselves. They're very involved. And so again, yeah, like you said, it depends on that person, but certainly I've seen higher rents with Airbnb.
And, you know, when you think about financial freedom, there's so many ways to become financially free. And what is financially free to one person is different than for another person. But to get there, there's a lot of ways. And real estate is one of the tried and true, you know, for, you know, hundreds of years. And then, you know, you need a mortgage to get real estate and you need to be protected. So you need insurance. So I love how you bundle all this together. But talk about your Financial Freedom Club, where I'm assuming you teach people some of the key points in how to accomplish this. And then if someone is ready, they could work with you. But I'm sure this is like an educational arm of your company, right?
Absolutely. And my background is in education and I love it. And we've always brought an education-based approach to our sales. We don't feel we're selling anybody anything, but we just rather give everybody all the information they need to make an informed decision. And the Financial Freedom Club, that we were going into local high schools and we were providing them with different courses pertaining to financial literacy that were in line with the curriculum here in Ontario. And we were doing that absolutely for free. That was part of our community service arm of our company. And so because of COVID, that kind of shut things down. And now I said, all right, let's build the Financial Freedom Club for serious students, for folks who are already in the market. They want to, you know, take their portfolio of 2 or 3 properties and maybe scale that to 10 properties. And they're going to need a little bit more training because it's not as simple as just buying your first property there. It's a whole different dynamic that's involved. And those students, I want to call them, but they're our clients. They're people who, again, have 1 or 2 or 3 properties. They want to scale. And so we get together in person. We do in-person events where we are putting together a bunch of speakers. It's not on social media. It's very, very private, low-key, private members club. And we get into very, very deep conversations about different topics pertaining to real estate.
And then let's tie it all together. And we've talked about how real estate is important, how you need a mortgage to get real estate most of the time. And then how does insurance tie into that mix?
So insurance is very interesting because there's so many avenues you can go with the insurance route. The first being estate planning. One of the reasons we got into insurance is we had a client come up to us and say, my father is passing away. He's not insurable. And we are reaching out to CRA because he has a bunch of real estate assets. And they are telling us that at the time of death, actually a day before, we are going to deem that his assets have been disposed of. And so they are getting hit with a big, big tax bill. And basically I was looking at one of their properties, and it was a large property that they had to sell in order to pay the tax bill, which was on the properties. So it's like, it was really, I don't want to say it's unfair, but it's something that they just weren't aware of. And I feel most people are not aware of that. That's how CRA looks at things here. And so if the father in that case had a life insurance policy that could cover some of that, then it would have been a lot easier for the family. And so estate planning is one of the avenues we go. The other thing that we really do promote on the insurance side is if you have kids, it's very, very easy to get them a permanent life insurance policy. And it's quite affordable compared to some other policies where by the time the kid is 18 years old, they typically are new to the banks. They're new to different lending institutions, and they may not have the strongest credit profile. But if you've taken a small life insurance policy on them that's permanent, they will have cash values built up into that policy where at 18 years old, the kid can actually access those cash values. And typically it'll be between $20,000 to $40,000, depending on the policy size. And they can access that funds, whether that's for a deposit or a down payment on a property, or they want to pay their tuition or whatever they need to do. They're going to have that loan, that policy loan, and they don't have to pay it back because it's going to be taken from the life insurance death benefit.
Yeah.
So there's different opportunities that route. And for some folks who are into TFSAs and RRSPs and everything is maxed out, permanent insurance could offer them a better solution, and they can leverage that life insurance policy at the bank or directly with the insurance company.
Yeah, you know, that's a topic that I work a lot with financial professionals. I work with them, I interview them, and I'm really well versed into that permanent life insurance. And we don't need to get deeper than what you just said, but I will tell you that you're spot on. And a lot of people hear the word life insurance and they think term, and they think permanent is bad, and they don't understand what you just said, and they don't realize that permanent life insurance has been around for hundreds of years, and the top banking institutions put our money that we put in the savings account into permanent life insurance because it's one of the most safe and proven ways to grow wealth out there. So I think that's spectacular. And yeah, when that kid gets to be a certain age and they go, hey, I'd like to do what dad's doing with buying that first property, you can become your own banker and pull money out of your own policy. And that just opens up a lot of opportunity.
That's right. And if Warren Buffett is buying life insurance and Ted Rogers had a $100 million life insurance policy, you know, I think we should have some life insurance too.
Exactly. And, you know, I've heard that Walt Disney accessed his permanent life insurance to build the first Disney park back in the day. So it's one of these things that you don't really hear much about. But when you see all the nuances of benefits, it's like it might mean you should take a closer look. So, Matthew, I think this is just spectacular of what you guys are putting together for your specific target audience of clients, which are millennials. And I'm sure that if a millennial's parent called you up and said, help us too, you were not going to turn them away. But it's just that's where the sweet spot is, that you work with millennials. But if someone is listening to this thinking, hey, I want to learn more or maybe get some more information about that Freedom Club, what's the best way they can reach out and learn more and also connect with you?
Yeah, for sure. And just to, on that point, usually when it's a millennial coming to us, they actually always bring their parent along. So it's a double whammy. The parent has experience. They see through it. They want to make sure their kids are working with the right professional. So it always works out for our benefit as well and theirs. To connect with me, I manage my own Instagram account. So at Matthew Ablican. And if you want to just get a copy of my free ebook that we just launched yesterday, It's the 6 steps to financial freedom. They could visit financialfreedomclub.ca/ebook, ebook without a hyphen. And I'll share that link with you, Mike, if you want to post that in your show notes. And I'm glad to give your audience a free copy of that.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your time coming on today, Matthew.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Influential Entrepreneurs with Mike Saunders. To learn more about the resources mentioned on today's show or listen to past episodes, visit www.influentialentrepreneursradio.com.